Welcome to the Jump's first half recap special. I am Rachel Nichols alongside NBA champion Richard Jefferson, also NBA champion and former finals MVP Paul Pierce. Gentlemen, the NBA is heading into the All-Star break this weekend, and due to the unique scheduling this year, we are right at the halfway mark of the regular season. So coming up later, Richard and Paul are going to give out their midseason awards for MVP, Defensive Player of the Year, Rookie of the Year. You want to stick around for that. But first, I want to take your pulse, guys, on where we stand in each conference, starting out west. So, Richard, throw the actual regular standings out. We're not talking about who is ranked on this particular day at this particular moment in 1, 2, or 3. For you, for your rankings, how would you rank the Western Conference with what you've seen in the first half of the season?
I think the top four teams, regardless of record, are Lakers, Clippers, Denver, and Utah. Those are.
Is that in order?
I would say if you asked me what teams I thought could make it to the finals, mm-hmm. I would say Lakers, Clippers, Utah, then Denver. So, okay. You know, Jokic is having an MVP season.
Of you.
I don't know. That's a great picture. Shows my head nice and shiny.
Very shiny.
And then I think Utah has just been the best team all year long. But you got to respect the Lakers and the Clippers for some reason, including myself. We just keep adding them in there.
All right, not a bad list, but I agree with you on the Lakers.
Okay.
Clippers, I think they're head and shoulders. But I got to throw the Phoenix Suns in there.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
They've been underrated. Of course, Utah has the best record, but watch out for the Phoenix Suns, I'm telling you. The way they ended the bubble to where they are now, I mean, they have to be a threat.
Yeah, that's fair.
The leadership of Chris Paul, they got a closer in Booker, and they have an outstanding young group of guys around, great coaching staff. So just watch out for Phoenix when come playoff time.
Why are you still sold on the Clippers? What makes you think that they're going to do better than they did last year?
Well, I mean, you got to give some credit to Kawhi Leonard being on your squad when he goes to Toronto and brings a championship there. With the addition of Paul George and the year he's having, you got championship caliber coaching and Ty Lue, the veterans around them. I think they've learned from their past failures of last year, and I think they're going to grow from it. There's no way if the Clippers were in the Staples Center last year, they blew a 3-1 lead either.
I do agree with you 100%.
I agree, but unfortunately...
No, you don't.
No, I do agree, but unfortunately we're in a position. We got to talk about what happened, not the ifs and the maybes. Unfortunately, I think the Clippers are still in a prove me mode. Prove to people. And I think Milwaukee's in the same boat.
Okay.
You have a couple of shortcomings in the postseason. It's like, dude, we can say how great your numbers are, what your record is, but if you don't do it in the postseason, Paul, like you made a career off of having good seasons, but being a monster in the postseason. Yeah. That's where you get your real reputation.
Absolutely.
And I know we keep talking about Kawhi and what he did with Toronto and what he did with San Antonio, but when he did with San Antonio, he had Hall of Famers around him.
Yeah.
Great time in Toronto, but now this is an opportunity for him kind of to pave his own way as a leader. So
absolutely.
I think the Clippers still have a lot to prove.
The Jazz, by the way, not in the preseason predictions of everyone to be at the top of the conference, but look, they've proven it. They're showing it on the court. You can't be anything but impressed, right, Paul, with what this team is doing?
Well, absolutely. I mean, shout out to Quinn Snyder.
Yeah.
I mean,
right?
I thought he should have been coach of the year.
Yeah.
For the cards he's been dealt, and not that he hasn't been dealt some good players, but, you know, they don't have that just outright superstar that you're saying, like, look, this guy is a generational player. Donovan Mitchell's been great. Rudy Gobert, he's been great. But then the rest of these guys, they're just glorified role players. I mean, Mike Conley, he's probably the best non-All-Star ever in the history of the league.
Right, at this point.
Yeah, at this point in time,
Can someone please get Mike Conley, like, a seat at the All-Star bench? Something? I mean, come on.
Can he be a captain and just let him, like, pick the players or something? No.
I'm sure LeBron would be happy to have some backup there.
I think the one thing that people are not using against Utah, but not that it's their fault, is that they haven't had any injuries. They haven't dealt with any real COVID stuff. So when you start to look at... Not at all, but not nearly as much as some of the other teams. Like you look at Portland.
Absolutely.
Ton of injuries, you know, dealing with different stuff. And Dame Lillard, that's part of the reason why he's in the MVP conversation, is because he's kept them relevant in the top five for the most part over the course of the season. But I think Utah's been playing
amazing.
Utah
doesn't get respect, and I'll tell you why. It's the uniforms. Stars, the color pattern.
Oh, come on.
I'm telling you, they need, once they get new uniforms that, you know, a little more sexy to them. I mean, I don't know.
Isn't one of their, I can't keep track because every team has six uniforms right now, but isn't one of them a throwback to the Stockton and Malone unis, right?
Yeah, I just,
I didn't say that. Utah fans, I have no issue with your color patterns. I just want to say direct
all. They'll get more recognition if they have better uniforms.
Direct your mentions to Paul Pierce. He's at Paul Pierce on Twitter or Instagram. I'm going to say enough stuff to piss you guys off. That one wasn't me.
Out of that. And look, I will say this about Utah, too. Sure, they didn't deal with that kind of stuff in the first half of the season, but we don't, that's not saying that they will deal with it in the second half of the season. Hopefully, things are only getting better in terms of COVID, in terms of herd immunity and people getting vaccinated and all of that as we go through the next few months. And by the way, they have already played the toughest part of their schedule.
That's what's the most impressive.
And that is the thing you have to look at when you're projecting out what's happening.
They have the antibodies because it started in Utah.
Well,
I'm trying to tell you.
All right, let's head out
here
east.
We go.
Now, where we see the emergence of both the Sixers and the Nets in the first half, Paul, how many teams have a legitimate shot of winning the East, and how do you rank them?
It's the Nets. The Nets. And the Nets. I mean, look at what they've done.
We got to fix the graphics.
I said 76ers Bucks, but when I look at them, they haven't had Durant. They haven't had Kyrie. Harden's been the one constant they have since he's made the trade.
Right.
And that's why I have him in the MVP conversation. But can you imagine when they get all three healthy and get some games under their belt? I believe they've only played like seven games together.
Yes.
I mean, come on. And they're still winning games. They're a half game out of first place. Without all three of them only playing seven games.
Well, and you talked about Utah playing the most difficult part of their schedule, right? Mm-hmm. Utah has had one of the hardest strength of schedules up until this point.
Yep.
But the thing about the Brooklyn Nets is that their record versus teams over 500 is monstrous. It's like 12-2 or something absurd. And so I still think the Nets are the team to beat. I think the 76ers, and then obviously I do believe the Bucks are a team that if they were to make it to the final, nobody's going to be sitting up here on this panel being like, how did that happen?
Right.
It's like, hey, they made some shots. They did some things.
I will say, how did that happen?
You know, a lot of different variations can happen, but it's really the Brooklyn Nets to lose. And I won't quite give them the championship to lose, but it's their conference to lose. And so the Brooklyn Nets are the team to beat, not surprisingly, when you have three players of that caliber on the roster.
Now, I want to note that you guys picked four teams in the West, but only three teams in the East. And that's because the Eastern Conference, friends, there's a lot of parity. That's the nice way to say that. After the top three teams, the Eastern Conference has been where mediocrity lives, as Zach Lowe tried to coin a new slogan yesterday. I don't think the NBA is adopting that. Just four of the 15 teams are above 500 entering Wednesday, which is on pace to be tied for the lowest percentage of over 500 East teams entering the All-Star break since the merger, people, in 1977. That is a long time ago. Richard, how many teams do you expect to finish above 500 this season in the East?
I'm going to say five. Going to say five. Like, understand that this is
an optimist.
Well, this is not a normal year, and I'm an Eastern Conference guy for the most part. I played the majority of my career there. Paul, same way, is that, look, understand this. Toronto, one of the historically best teams, is playing in Tampa, right? Like, there's a lot of different things going on in the Eastern Conference. It's just making this a little bit more difficult. I think the teams are better than their record is. Like, we sat up here and asked if it was, like, panic time for Boston because they were in the seventh spot. 2 days later, they're in the four spot, and they're above 500. So,
well, there was, like, a seven-way tie for fourth at one point statistically in the last 24 hours. So,
I just think that there's going to be five teams at the end of the day that'll start separating themselves as you get down the stretch.
And this is why I say to crown a true champion, you take the – listen, Boston is in the fourth seed in the Eastern Conference. You know what seed they would be if they were
– 1 through 16?
1 through 16. They'll be out the playoff. They'll be out the playoffs in the Western Conference right now.
Don't start that conversation, Paul. Don't start that 1 through 16.
That's why if you want to be the best in the world, you got to put the best 16 teams in the playoffs.
Don't do it.
See, this is what happens when it rains in L.A. Everyone starts with this, like, the crazy stuff.
All comes out.
Look,
you're going to have two teams in the East.
Rachel's going to start talking about
playoffs.
MVP and offensive player and the MVP, not the best player in the world.
Now that you mentioned it, no, just kidding. No. Look, this is, and I'll just say it again because people maybe don't know, this is not like a commissioner's decision.
Yeah,
the
absolutely.
Owners would have to vote. I believe it's like a 2/3 or a 3/4 majority, which means you'd have to have a chunk of Eastern Conference owners basically voting themselves out of the playoffs. And it's not just in terms of, oh, their fans wouldn't have as much fun or their players wouldn't get the experience. There is playoff money on the line. And so that tells you
travel would be impossible.
It will never happen.
No,
travel
would be impossible. A lot of things you have to change.
Travel would be impossible.
You wouldn't play each other four times in the same conference.
It's
you would have to change up a lot of things along the way.
Coming up, we're going to play Panic or Patience here on The Jump. Stick around to find out if it's time to sound the panic alarm on some of the more underachieving teams this season. Trade deadline's coming up soon, friends. It is time for an all-new segment here on The Jump. Panic or patience? It's extremely self-explanatory, so we're just going to get to it. First up, the defending Miami Heat Eastern Conference champs have been dealt a difficult hand with injuries and coronavirus. But even then, not quite look what we expected. Take a look at the standings. They currently sit in seventh place. Of course, they're only a game out of fourth, as we discussed in the previous segment. Everyone's tied in the Eastern Conference virtually. So, Richard, let's start with you. Panic or patience? And I do want to just say this. Part of the panic would be we got to make a move at the trade deadline, not panic. We're going to throw out the roster.
No, I think this is patience for the Miami Heat. They've always been a patient organization, so nothing is going to change at this point in time. I know it's beautiful music. Thank you.
Amazing.
I need to get that when I'm walking around. Mm-hmm. But the reason why I think is I think that they weathered the storm.
Into a room.
Yeah, they weathered the storm. Not having a guy like Jay Crowder, not having guys like that in your locker room. You see the impact that he had in Phoenix. They needed extra bodies. They didn't have them. But look,
with Butler,
they're great. Without Butler, they struggle. There's only one Jimmy Butler,
yeah.
So yeah. I think it's patience.
Yeah, their roster, they're young. I mean, 90% of their roster is on their rookie deal probably still. I mean, they have time. I mean, I think you have to coincide it with Jimmy's Butler's age, and you got to figure Jimmy Butler has a lot of years left in the tank.
Mm-hmm.
When healthy, he's one of the best in the league. And, these other guys, they're young, they're getting better. Bam, he's become an all-star in this league. You got to expect him to get back to the All-Star game eventually. Maybe he's one of the snubs this year.
Yeah.
And so it's nothing but patience here in Miami. They were ahead of a curve last year. Nobody saw them getting to the finals. And so,
Except
for Jimmy Butler. I mean, absolutely. So it's a lot of patience that they need down there in Miami.
All right, I'm kind of going to mess up producer Danny's game a little bit. Can I say ponder?
No,
between
that's not
patience
one of them.
And panic?
That's not
only,
one of them.
Only
no,
this.
Not listening.
I would ponder a trade for Victor Oladipo since it seems he is going to be available. I would just think about it and
the
see what the price
too high.
Is. Otherwise, maybe you try to sign him
Tyler
this offseason.
Tyler Hero. It's going to be Duncan Robinson.
Ponder.
Nope.
Next up, the Tampa Bay Raptors. Although maybe the championship shine will wear off on them. Everyone's a champion in Tampa. This team started 2-8, but they're slowly climbing their way back to .500. We all know this is a good team. They just haven't quite looked like the Raptors we've expected. So here's another look at the standings. They're 17-17, a very claustrophobic 4-10 in the East. Paul, you've watched a lot of Toronto this year. Are you panic or patience?
This is a panic for me.
Yeah.
This is a panic into patience because I think you have to find a way to get some value for Kyle Lowry. As they're getting older, this team is not a championship team as built.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you could try to get some value
for Kyle contract.
Lowry, and that's what I'm saying. You make a trade and do Kyle Lowry adjust and get him on a team where he could probably try to win another championship. But then it turns into patience because you get some young assets to build around Siakam and Van Vliet and move forward with this franchise to build their way back into a championship contender.
I'm going to say panic also. I think, no one questions what Masai is planning. He's planning something.
Mm-hmm.
But I think right now you talk about windows, and we're going to mention that a bunch. I think the window for this team currently constructed to contend for a conference finals is gone.
Okay.
So it's kind of like sell high.
Right.
If we can get some picks for this. I'm not like, you have great pieces still. There is no window for Van Vliet. There is no window for Siakam.
Yeah.
But there is a window to get value. value from Kyle. And so I think you do that. You start not rebuilding, but reloading, right? But right now, you got to give up some assets before you move forward.
Well, look, and Masai, as we've seen, is a pragmatist, right? I mean, we know what happened with DeMar DeRozan. And when he sees something that's going to improve his team, he goes for it. I will say this. If you look at the teams around the league who are positioned to maybe get Kyle Lowry to make that offer, you know who maybe the best positioned team is with the assets?
Who?
The Philadelphia 76ers, friends. Ooh. Do you know where Kyle Lowry is from?
Philly.
Philadelphia.
Well, Nova boy.
Right. Next, everyone's favorite bubble team, the Denver Nuggets. Despite an MVP caliber season from Jokic so far, they just have not looked again like the team that we thought was ready to take the next step. So here's where they stack up in the West, 20-15. They are seventh in the West right now. What do you think? Panic, patience, Paul? I mean, they lost, you know, what do you think?
This is a panic button for me. I mean, you talk about a team that was in the conference finals a year ago, and now you have Joker playing at an all-time high level at the center, something we haven't seen in many, many years. You got to be able to keep this guy happy moving forward because, as you know, you start wasting years like this that Joker's having. And the only reason he won't get MVP this year is because their team is not going to be in the top four of the conference. And so if there's a move out there you can make to vault this team back into the top four, I think you got to do it. And that may mean sacrificing Jamal Murray.
What?
I mean,
you mean Michael Porter Jr.?
Listen, if you could get a bill for Murray, would you do it? I mean, come on. It's something you have to think about because they're not going to just – I mean, he has value. And that's this is not a knock on Jamal Murray. But, you know, he has value over there.
No, look, the
and Michael Porter Jr., we don't know who he's going to be yet. And so if you want something, you got to give something. If you want to take that next step, it's going to cost you.
No. Like, respectfully,
would you do deal for
the Hall of Famer next to me, like, this is a patient moment, right? They have been progressing every single year. I understand they had a shortened offseason. Jamal got off to a slow start. He's been playing well of late. Joker's playing at a high level. But ultimately, these guys are still, like, 25 years old. So your window for them to be great is still another 7-8 years.
Yes.
So, and you know, and Michael Porter Jr. is young. They got RJ Hampton on their bench. They, I like Zeke Nnaji. They have a ton of talent. So there's no, hey, when you look at the San Antonio Spurs over the Tim Duncan 20 years, there were years that they were first, there were years that they were seventh, there were years that they were eighth, there was years that they were third. Mm-hmm. So it was just like, there's going to be years where you have up and down. When you have talented young players, stay pat, because they're still in the postseason. They got off to a slow start, so this is patience.
So you think that Murray can be that Robin for Joker?
100%. I think he still has room to grow. He's got room to grow.
Right?
He's and he just had a 50 ball with no free throws, which is the craziest stat I've still ever seen.
At this point in his career, you thought he'd be an all-star by now.
Agreed.
Yes.
You thought he'd be in an all-star game. And he's a great player in this league.
Yeah.
But you thought at this point his development. But if you look at his stats for the last 3 years, he hasn't got that much better.
Can I, Director Kathy, can we get the patience harps one more time? Can we get those?
No, I got no argument with you there.
There we go.
But not that much better. He's still a 20-point elite point guard scorer. He might just be outside the all-star group. He might just be outside the top seven. But, yeah.
So those are the patience harps. And what about the, there we go, the siren. My point is that this is what is going to be played when you walk in the room.
The siren, everyone already knows.
Coming up, especially after that little detour, we're handing out our midseason awards. Who is the first half MVP? There are a lot of great candidates. Stick around to find out what Paul and Richard think. All right, it is time for the Jumps Mid-Season Awards. It's not who's going to win at the end of the season, but who deserves recognition if the award was given out right now. It's the most awards reform. This is the only thing I have power to do. This is all I got. We begin with, of course, most valuable player. According to Caesars, William Hill, LeBron James is now the current favorite, with Joel Embiid, Nikola Jokic rounding out the top three. Well, at the beginning of the season, it was Luka.
Yeah.
And again, I always want to say about betting houses, their favorite is who they think they can take the most money on. It's not a basketball analysis.
That's why Luka's card went for $4 million.
There you go. So, Paul, you tweeted out your MVP rankings earlier this week. Who is your midseason MVP?
Yeah. Right now, it's Joel Embiid.
Okay.
I mean, he has the top spot in the Eastern Conference. He's been dominant. The way he's transformed his game, his body, his mental, he's giving you 30 and 11. And, people are going to say, well, Joker's doing this, Luka's doing that, LeBron's doing this. This guy has been flat out dominant, because before the season, I didn't see the 76ers being in this spot. Yeah, I had them in the top four seed in the Eastern Conference. I thought they really lost a couple years when they lost out to Jimmy Butler, J.J. Redick. Yeah, they got Seth Curry. You know, they got some shooting over there, but I just didn't see this team to be in the top spot in the Eastern Conference, and it's all because of this guy being as dominant as he has. He's been consistent, he's been reliable, and he has them right where they need to be in the Eastern Conference, and that's right on the top.
So I got Joel Embiid second. I really do. Joel Embiid is like, when you look, watch the Lakers go through that little four-game stretch, you're like, oh, this is Embiid, and Embiid had a 50 ball, mm-hmm. and Ben Simmons, who was out a little bit, is back. So I just, for me right now, watching what LeBron James has done early on, again, prior to that four-game stretch, they were the number one team. Now they've won two.
But
that's what MVPs typically step up in those moments, right? And yeah. So, you know, they struggled. As soon as they got Schroeder back, they go and blow out the Warriors. They go blow out Portland. So I still think it's LeBron.
What did they do last night?
Well, look, they lost to the Phoenix Suns, but I'm going to say it is a very, very close race.
It is close. Like LeBron, he's the best player. No, listen, LeBron is the best player in the game. He's the best player in the game, right?
Fair.
And if we're going to say that, even though you lose AD, you lose Schroeder, you find a way to keep your teams afloat.
Yeah.
Now, he's a little older. He hasn't done that. You know, I think their record is more like 6-4 or 7-5 since AD's been out. And so he took a step back for the last couple weeks. So when AD comes back and they start winning, he'll be back there. But Joel Embiid is there for me. And even Harden, I have to put Harden in there. I mean, no KD. Kyrie's been, you don't know when he's going to show up. You know what type of mood he's going to be in that
day. Kyrie's played very well.
He's played very well. Nothing against his game, but you just know, you don't know when he's going to be in and out the lineup. Mm-hmm. And like I said, they've been seven games together, and Harden is reliable. And you know what other ability? He's available.
And the things that you have to put him in there too. The things that James Harden has done since the moment he showed up with the Nets have been historic. Right, it was like it's been over the top. He's already second all time in triple doubles. I think it's really, really close.
It's close.
It's very, it's very, very close. No one knows.
It's going to change week in and week out for me. Just so you guys know. Well, next week it could be LeBron, Harden, Embiid, but right now it's Embiid.
Well, let's move on to Defensive Player of the Year. Rudy Gobert has won the award twice before. Ben Simmons has called himself the best defensive player in the league. LeBron James only second to Gobert in defensive win shares, which, Richard, I know is a stat you follow religiously.
Yeah, really closely.
Who you got? DPOY.
Me, I think Rudy Gobert. I think the Utah Jazz, having gone through the toughest part of their schedule, having dominated the league, the league, and we're not going to throw out excuses or anything.
No.
They have, like, rebounding. Like, you go through down the stats, and they are top two or three in offense and defense and three-point shot. They're crushing. And so I think the anchor of their defense is Rudy Gobert. He's been that guy. I think, you know, the first team, I think you would go Ben Simmons is close. I think Joel Embiid gets some votes, but I think it's Rudy Gobert.
This is my thing. Like,
tell me your thing.
We judge the defensive win shares. Like, to me, the defensive player of the year, you got to pass the eye test with me. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like, Ben Simmons, I haven't watched him enough to say he's a great defender, but, like, when I see the eye test, I'm not seeing those guys.
He's a great defender.
Like, he's a great defender, but, like, the defenders in my era, when you see the Gary Payton picking up full court, you know, like up in you, like I'm on you. I'm like Tony Allen. When we see guys like that, just all no breathing room. I don't see that from the perimeter guys these days. And so when I say defensive player of the year, from a perimeter guy, I like to see those type of intangibles, the steals, the not giving any guy any room. So for me, it's Rudy Gobert because he clogs up the lane and it's tough to score over him. For a perimeter guy, I just don't see that today. Like a Pat Beverly, he's not giving you no space.
I'll say this and we'll move on.
And the stats may say otherwise.
Ben Simmons is very, very close to that, because when we talk about positionless basketball, he gets into players 1-5 because he's 6'10". That's all I'm going to say.
Let's go to Rookie of the Year. And again, this is at the mid-season.
Why are we talking about Rookie of the Year? We know who it is.
Well, that's what I think. Caesars William Hill lists LaMelo Ball as the overwhelming favorite. Our producers agree. He's the overwhelming favorite. And apparently you guys agree. He's the overwhelming favorite.
Like, congratulations, LaMelo, on your Rookie of the Year. Who was it? Stephen A. said, you are everything that your brother was promised to be.
Oh, come on.
He said it. I didn't say
it. His dad said he was going to be the best ball anyway.
Yeah, he did, Well, I agree.
I mean, come on.
Whether that's true or not, he is next level.
He is box office. He is box office. There's only probably about 10 to 12 people that you would pay to go see, that you would tune in to watch. And take hype away, LaMelo Ball is that guy, mm-hmm. in my opinion.
Yeah,
he's one
I
of those
agree.
Guys.
I mean, look at the path he took, though. You know, leaving high school. So do more youngins take this path?
Don't well, that, is certainly, true. Went outside the traditional, I mean, not just college, but outside the traditional high school
you know,
route.
He's been playing pro ball since.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you got a brother that's got millions of dollars to make sure everything is catered and okay for you and all the trainers and all that other stuff.
But if I'm GM and if I'm, you know, a high school guy or a coach or a father, I'm looking at the route these. Because look at Luka. He's been pro since 14. And look where he is. Look at LaMelo. He went pro out of high school, went overseas and played a couple years. And so is this the new path that we're going to see younger talent
take? My kid is 5 years old, and I've already thought about putting him in the IMG Academy. The IMG Academy, they only take players at seven. Like, this is like Juilliard. If you can play the piano at seven, you're off. And so I'm still waiting on the application to come back to see if my five-year-old can go.
Comedian Tracy Morgan is stopping by the show next. He'll talk about his role in Coming to America. Get it? Coming to his beloved New York Knicks and NBA Finals predictions. I expect him to be very excited about his team. Keep it posted. Back home for a week in a way we ain't sinning. Joined by one of the stars of Coming to America, streaming on Amazon Prime March 5th, comedian, actor, hoop fan, the one and only Mr. Tracy Morgan. Welcome to The Jump, sir.
Hello, hello, hello.
Hello, hello, hello. Tracy, the plot of Coming to America is that Prince Akeem, Eddie Murphy, comes back to the States to find his long-lost son. You play that kid's Uncle Reem, but you were originally supposed to play the son, right? What happened?
Well, that was I wanted to play the son. I wasn't. I mean, the way it is the way it was. But that was the idea. But then Eddie said, "You know, you my age. So how you gonna play my son?" So that would have been a little awkward.
I don't want to break this to you, Tracy, but you're only 7 years younger than Eddie, and I think you're only a year difference from Leslie Jones, who plays the mother.
He wasn't making no babies at 7 years old.
I know that working with Eddie Murphy was a real dream come true for you. You first met him when you were on the cast of Saturday Night Live. What do you remember about the first time you spoke to him?
Well, the first time I spoke to him, my second year, either my first or second year on Saturday Night Live, and everyone in the studio knew Eddie was coming up. So I was just waiting by the reception desk for him, and he came out the elevator, and I saw him. And it's like the first real big, huge star I ever met in my life. So I talked to him, I said, "What's up, Eddie? I'm a big fan." And we walked, he grabbed me by my shoulder and we walked to his dressing room. And I just became friends with him.
It's amazing that all these years later, you guys get to work together. You recounted saying something to Eddie in that moment that I thought was really poignant.
I said to him, "Thank you for holding the door open for me."
That means a lot, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Eddie, he held the door open for a lot of people, not just black actors on the show, but everyone.
Now, you guys got to do a lot of fun things on set here. In fact, we recently learned Zamunda Palace, those scenes were filmed at one of Rick Ross's homes in Georgia. Were you, Eddie, Arsenio, Wesley, were you guys good house guests? Because, you know, you're in Rick Ross's house. You got to look good.
Yeah, the OG let us use his house, and Rick Ross is the OG. He has a beautiful estate, and I love the horses. He has horses. He has a tremendous amount of land there, and it was a beautiful place to film at, and it truly was a palace. It was royalty. So big ups to you, Rick Ross. I love you, man. You know what it is, OG.
When your house, and by the way, not just your house, one of your homes can stand in for a palace on a movie set, you know
that's
that
big.
You're doing something right.
Yeah,
so.
That's big.
Shouts
well, he makes great music. He makes timeless classics. And it's going to be, you know, I'm happy for Rick Ross, you know, because every day I'm hustling.
Amen. I want to talk about your Knicks because they are heading into the All-Star break near the top of the Eastern Conference standings. They have not played this well this late in the season since 2013. We saw a video of Knicks fans celebrating outside MSG after a recent win. They're dancing in the streets, Tracy. Is it too soon to celebrate, or are you with them?
Our team is winning now. We're happy for them. They're playing great defense. I got to recently go to the game, and I seen the front office, and I just thanked them. It's been a long time coming. Thank you. And the team, the players, the young players, Thibodeau, is all coming together in times like this. But, you know, we're happy that the team is competing very well.
If you have suffered the way Knicks fans have suffered for so long, you absolutely get to celebrate this. Being normal is
everything
incredible.
For a reason. Everything for a reason. So when we do get the chip, it'll be that much sweeter.
Absolutely.
Now we've waited a while.
The Knicks have so many notable celebrity fans, but I am putting you right up there in the top of the pantheon. We have Spike Lee, Adam Sandler, Jon Stewart, John McEnroe, Jason Sudeikis. So I want to know where you feel you rank in terms of passionate Knicks fans, because there's a lot of competition there in the celebrity
spot. Number one. Win, lose, or draw, I'm with my team.
Not Spike? You're ahead of Spike?
I'm number one.
Okay.
Win, lose, or draw, I'm with my team. When the Knicks are out of the when the Knicks season is over, my basketball season is over. I don't watch championships. I don't do that.
Really?
I watch the Knicks. I don't.
Huh. All right. In fact, I know that you've tried to recruit for the Knicks in the past. We saw the clip from a couple years ago on the Dan Patrick Show. You made your case for why Kevin Durant should choose the Knicks in free agency. I want to run it back for the fans right now.
This is Rome, okay? This is Rome. You win a ring here, Wall Street is right down the block, Kevin. Win a ring here, you can sell all the Big Macs and Cadillacs you want after that. This is the biggest market in the world. The Knicks can be in last place. We still make the most money in the NBA. This is New York City, baby. Rome. You're in the center of the universe.
I love that because you were like, Rome is where the gladiators fight. And KD sort of took your advice about coming to New York, but he chose Brooklyn over Manhattan. How did you feel about that?
We don't need him. Look where we at now. We good. We just, when it comes to Knicks fans, we got to be patient. We got to be patient. So when I said that, I meant it.
Do you have any love for the Nets? I mean, they are Brooklyn team. They're New York team.
Do I got love for who?
The Nets. They're Brooklyn team.
Do I got love for who?
I'm sorry. Connection must not
now?
Be working.
What'd you say now? What'd you say now?
How do you feel Durant, Kyrie, and Harden look together?
I'm not going into that. I'm not discussing that. Let's keep the topic on my Knicks.
Period. I respect Tracy Morgan. What is your NBA Finals prediction for this year? Are the Knicks in it? I guess I should ask you.
We win in the championship.
There we go. No other team but the New York Knicks, right? I love it. I love it. Tracy, I can't wait to see this movie. I'm thrilled you and Eddie finally got to work together. Good luck with everything.
Thank you. God bless you, man.
Thanks. We're almost out of time, but before we go, the spiciest second half predictions for each of you. Well, Paul, go.
Phoenix Suns will have the best record in the West.
Ooh. Second half, Richard? You got 3 seconds. You got 1 minute.
Never okay. See, okay. This is what it is.
Up.
Here we go. This is what my prediction is. Where's my camera? That's my camera. This is my prediction. We will not be surprised by who wins the championship, but we will be surprised by who else they're playing against. We're not surprised that the Lakers won. We were surprised that Miami was the team that they were playing in the finals. I think that's what we're going to have this year.
In which direction?
Because I don't know.
I'm not going to be surprised to see the Lakers and Nets.
I'm just saying. If the Nets win the championship but they go against Utah, we'd be surprised that Utah was there.
Yeah, absolutely.
The Lakers win the championship but they play against Boston, yeah. We'd be surprised that Boston's going to be there.
Your spicy prediction is no Lakers-Nets finals, that someone else will edge in there.
Maybe, according to
Paul, it will be the Phoenix Suns.
They're going to have the best record in the West, and I'll tell you what. But check this out. Lakers are not going to go for it. Clippers are going to be resting. Utah, come on, they got to fall off some point.
We'll
Phoenix, minding on the bubble.
Enjoy the All-Star game on Sunday. We'll be back on Monday, 3:00 Eastern. See you then. Bye.